Call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, March 11th, 2015. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present, Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Stedman, Senator Welikowski, and myself, Senator Giesel. I believe that Senator Coghill, Michiki, and Stoltz will be along shortly. Thank you to Ann and Thatcher, who are running our recording and audio. Thank you to Ike, who is staff to this committee. Today we're going to take up two subjects. The first one is House Joint Resolution 7, sponsored by Representative Bryce Edgman, so welcome. And then after that, we're going to hear a presentation on the frontier basins, otherwise known as Middle Earth. So we'll start out with HJR 7. So welcome, Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Bryce Edgman. I represent House District 37, which is Bristol Bay and the Aleutians. And I really appreciate the opportunity for the committee to take it up House JR 7. Essentially, what the resolution speaks to expresses the legislature's opposition to the formation of what would have been called the Aleutian Islands National Marine Sanctuary. And this was brought forward by a group centered in Washington, D.C., called the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, who essentially took it upon themselves through a couple of their Alaskan members to submit an application to form a sanctuary that would have encompassed about the size of Alaska, essentially in and around the Aleutian Islands in the Alaska Peninsula area. And this application was done so without any consultation or any involvement of any of the local entities. And rejecting the application, as was done so in late January, the West Coast Office of the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, basically said, hey, we have to reject your application. Let's go around because it doesn't meet the criteria of fully involving any of the, or to some extent involving the local communities. But if you submit a smaller application with some consultation, some involvement of the communities, that would probably give us the information we would need to more favorably entertain your request to form a sanctuary. And I won't talk this too much more, Madam Chair, other than to say that the resolution also argues that there's essentially scrupulous and rigorously managed fisheries regime already in place through the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, Department of Fish and Game, National Marine Fisheries Service. Of course, the Board of Fishery has authority along the coast as well. And there's been a recently completed Aleutian Islands Risk Assessment study, which is a multidimensional study looking at all the shipping hazards along the Great Circle Trade Route. There's several thousand ships that pass from the west coast of the United States that intersects with Aleutian Islands, then journeys over to the eastern Asian seaboard. In closing my opening comments, I would just basically again reiterate that there was no support from Aleutians East Borough on Alaska, any of the communities, the tribes, any of the organizations. And HGR 7 basically asks that the legislature join those residents in voicing their vehement disapproval of this nomination and any similar nomination to create an Aleutian Islands National Marine Sanctuary.
Very good, and I do appreciate that last bit resolved. It's pretty clear. The committee members also have the NOAA application. There's also the letter to the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, so you can see those original documents. Any questions? There's also numerous letters here of support for this resolution. Do committee members have any questions for Representative Edgman? Yes, Senator Welikowski.
It doesn't appear that there's any opposition. Are you aware of any opposition to it?
Through the Chair, Senator Welikowski, no. And I checked, just to be diligent about things, I checked all up and down the coast, and I did not encounter any opposition from Bristol Bay or anywhere. In fact, everybody I talked to said, go after them. So.
Good. Any other questions? Senator Costello?
Thank you. And Representative Edgman, I wanted to, through the chair, mention that a few of us had a chance to travel to Washington, D.C., and we are seeing this kind of intervention into our state's economy, our state's business as a matter of course now from outside organizations. And I just want to appreciate you bringing this before us so that we have a chance then to communicate that with some of the people that we've met with previously, and as we meet more members of Congress, which there are many new members of Congress, I might add, that all need to be educated on the issues of Alaska. So this kind of communication is something I think that is nice to send to them. And with that, I would like to the chair to entertain a friendly amendment. I believe on line 16, page 3, there should be an S. So it would read U.S. representatives. Yes. Representative Edgman? Yes,
Representative. Representative Costello. The version that I have in front of me reads on line 16, and the Honorable Don Young, U.S. Representative. Did I not read that the way that you're reading it?
Yes, Senator Costello. I think what he's pointing out is that the two senators are listed there, and it says U.S. Senators. That refers to them. And then there's Don Young, U.S. Representative. I think if there were semicolons between, you might see that the U.S. representative refers to Don Young, and then members of the Alaska delegation in Congress.
Thank you.
Refers to all of them.
Thank you for that clarification. So therefore, we are not sending it to the entire membership of Congress.
Representative Edgman.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Costello, that's correct.
Okay.
All right, great. I do want to recognize that we've been joined by Senator Coghill and Senator Stoltz. Welcome. Any other questions on the resolution for the sponsor? Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on the resolution? Seeing none. Anyone online? Okay, there are. All right, one person. Excellent. So, I guess if I had used my little gizmo here, right? I had this iPad now and I didn't use it, so bad me. Okay, here we go. Let me get it. All right, so we have one person, Ernie Weiss, with the Aleutians East Borough. Mr. Weiss, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, very clear. If you would introduce yourself and your affiliation and give us your testimony. Welcome.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ernie Weiss, representing the Aleutians East Borough as Natural Resources Director. Aleutians East is one of the many entities, municipalities, tribes, and communities that publicly oppose the Aleutian Island National Marine Sanctuary by letter or by resolution. There are two main problems with the proposed sanctuary. One, the sheer size of it, 554,000 nautical square miles, and it would have completely encompassed our borough. And two, there is zero community support. Our borough was not even consulted or notified before this nomination was submitted. I now live in Anchorage, but I lived in King Cove for many years, and this reminded me of when the federal government decided to make Eisenbeck a wilderness without even inviting the people of King Cove to the meeting, let alone asking us whether we wanted to build a road in the future to the nearby airport. So we oppose this nomination from the start. We think it's great that NOAA made the right decision and denied the sanctuary nomination, but we still think it's important to weigh in at this time, as we do expect more nominations to come. The Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference passed a resolution in opposition to the sanctuary at a membership meeting just last week, and the North Pacific Fishery Management Council has asked to be advised of future nominations to be able to provide input. The state needs to be a part of the process. We appreciate Representative Edgman's work on this, and we ask that you please do pass House Joint Resolution 7. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Weiss. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Weiss? Senator Stoltz has a question, Mr. Weiss.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Weiss, and I guess the sponsor as well. On the whereas, there's a statement about concern about the withdrawal of oil and gas leasing. Is this a signal that if leasing is proposed in the Western Alaska and Aleutian region, that there'll be broad community support for oil and gas leasing? Or am I inferring far too much?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman here, I would say that is beyond the scope of this resolution. And in terms of the Aleutians basin leasing, the president did not too long ago issue an executive proclamation basically saying that was out of going to be open for further exploration, but I'm really not addressing that at all with this resolution, nor does, if I may, does the sanctuary at least at this point, involved that particular decision, the proposed sanctuary.
Madam Chair, just commentary. Obviously, it's in there gratuitously that we're listing the issue of oil and gas leasing if it's not germane to the issue. I don't want to pretend that we're in favor of that region of oil and gas leasing if it's not really meant. I understand there's broad support for fishing, but I would like resolutions to be meaningful, and maybe we should delete that if it's not relevant. And I support it being in there, but if it's the communities and the sponsor only want to use it to as a pry bar to support protection of other industries, and it's a little bit troublesome to me.
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz. No, it's not included to, as you say, be a pry bar or to carry additional inference or anything like that. It's only included in the resolution to basically say, as a factual issue, that the president withdrew that area from oil and gas leasing in December. And so that's another reason. Why would you need a marine sanctuary? I mean, that's basically why we're putting it in there. And again, two wholly separate issues, at least from my viewpoint.
Senator Stoltz, follow up?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just won't presuppose things, and we'll have to work individually on each challenge, I guess. This won't increase my expectations about broader economic diversification in Alaska.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. Any other questions for the bill sponsor or for Mr. Weiss? All right, hearing none, is there anyone else online who wishes to testify? Answer is no. Again, once more in the room, anyone wish to testify? All right, we'll close public testimony. Thank you very much, Representative Edgman. Do I have a motion? Senator, Vice Chair Costello.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Joint Resolution 7, Work Order LS0368/ECHO from the committee with individual recommendations and previously attached zero fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, CS for House Joint Resolution 7 will move from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the transmittal document. We're back on the record, and we are welcoming James Mary, who is the Senior Vice President of Lands and Natural Resources for Doyon. So welcome. After Mr. Mary speaks, we'll be hearing from Mr. Bovey, who is with OTNA, followed by Greta Church. Okay, great. Thank you. And Lance Miller with NANA, and then last of all, Department of Natural Resources. So welcome, Mr. Mary.
Thank you. First, let me apologize. I'm getting over a bad cold, so my voice is a little rough this afternoon. But I am James Mary, for the record. I'm the Senior Vice President of Lands and Natural Resources at Doyon. I've been there for a long time. My entire career has been involved with natural resource development and land management over a 35-year career at Doyon. So we want to talk a little bit about interior oil and gas exploration. We are part of what is generally known as Middle Earth, which Middle Earth is generally defined under different statutes, I think, at least not defined, but it's come to be known as Middle Earth, all areas outside of Cook Inlet and south of the Brooks Range. And so a number of frontier basins still exist in that large geographic swath. So I'm trying to figure out how to move this thing along.
Could you help him move?
Yeah, this is...
Ike will help you here.
Okay,
just
Ike.
Second.
Just
that way.
Okay. All right. I'm looking at the overview slide right now, and basically I'm going to talk about two basins where Doyon has been active. There's some similarities and differences between the two. I'm really going to focus mostly on Nenana, and that's really where we spent most of our effort the last several years, including a fairly deep well, sidetrack, and two seismic programs, one most recently, a 3D in fall of 2014. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the presence in both basins of all the elements of a potentially prolific hydrocarbon system, basically sources, traps, and seals, and talk a little bit about the extensive column of wet gas that we found in the 2013 well, which we think bodes well for both oil and gas in the Nenana Basin and perhaps even in the Yukon Flats Basin. And then I want to finish up a little bit with talking about the importance of the exploration credits program to kind of bring us to the point where we are today and how well it has worked. This is just a map of the state, which kind of gives you a general sense of where these two basins are. And I should qualify, I am not a geoscientist, but I will talk a little bit of textbook geology, I think, as we go through this. This is a kind of a close-up of the two interior basins here. The lower one is the Nenana Basin. Nenana Basin, and I'll have a much better image of this in a few moments, but we have leases in the Nenana Basin, mostly of state of Alaska lands. The Yukon Flats are really all lands that are owned by Doyon and village corporations. Land tenure, just to maybe break that down a little bit more, we hold about 400,000 acres of leases from the state of Alaska, 7-year terms that will primary term will end 2019-2020 time frame. We pay yearly rentals to the state of Alaska of about 1.2 million acres. There is about 42,000 acres of Doyon land, subsurface lands. We own that in conjunction, on the surface at least, with the Tagatili Corporation of Nenana Village Corporation. It's a group that we've worked with very closely in our exploration efforts. They have been very supportive, and they have a number of support services they've been able to provide for us, and it's worked very well. No federal ownership nearby. However, the northern third of the leases are in the Minto Flat State Game Refuge, where oil and gas is allowed conditionally, and so it's a little tougher to permit. But we have done seismic programs on the refuge, and it's worked out okay. Yukon Flats is a great contrast. It's a much larger area that we think is prospective. There are three sub basins up there. It's where we own Anxa lands. There are no time constraints, no holding costs as there are with the state lands, and in part that really drives our current strategy of focusing on Nenana and Minto. We know more about Nenana than we do the Yukon Flats. We're farther along, we're closer to infrastructure, but we're on the clock. And so we have to basically kind of get going and find things as soon as we possibly can. So that's where our main motivation in Nenana. However, I will point out that if we have success in Nenana, given, and I'll talk about the similarities geologically between the two basins, if we have success and we can demonstrate that the interior basins work through our efforts at Nenana, we really think that just blows the doors open on the whole Yukon Flats, because geologically they're very, very similar. There are three villages that we work with in the Yukon Flats, Stevens Village, Beaver, and Birch Creek. And the adjacent areas are around our holdings in the Yukon Flats is a federal wildlife refuge, which doesn't allow anything and will never allow anything. And they're not very friendly to things that we want to do out there, frankly.
Yes, Senator Stoltz, question.
Back to the previous slide, Mr. Mayor.
On the Nanana Basin, can you talk about your transportation infrastructure
available? I have a slide.
Okay, very good.
I'd be happy to. Love talking about that. It's a wonderful thing, actually. So,
it's some DNA on that one.
Okay. As I mentioned, they're very, very similar in age, style of deposition, things that, like I said, if the things work at Nanana, they ought to work in the Yukon Flats as well. And obviously that's why we're looking at Nanana first, because in large measure it's some of the infrastructure issues, and we're just farther along. We've done more work there. We do believe it's an oily system. Oil is our primary target. Obviously it's a higher value commodity, even at $50 or $60 oil. But we certainly would love to find a lot of gas, and we actually have seen a lot of gas and be able to do something with it locally and maybe even beyond. Quick overview, this is an area that the majors were in back in even the 60s and the 80s, left for different reasons. There are a couple of shallow wells on the flanks of the basin. A little bit of seismic was done in the 80s. We've actually licensed a lot of this data, so we have access to it. It kind of helped us kind of get started understanding the basin. More recently, we've conducted three seismic programs over the last 8 or 9 years, two more recently in 2012 and 2014. And we've drilled two wells on down to 11,000 feet and a little over 9,000 feet. And while nothing has been commercial, we've learned something new every time we've done something, and it's been positive every time. And so that's what's really kept us going. A lot of other studies that we do, GG Chem, those sorts of things, we see a lot of oil at the surface, actually, in surface seeps. So they're micro seeps. They're not big, gaudy things that you can see from the air or something. But we've done a lot of sampling, and there's oil in both basins, basically. Whether there's a lot of it or enough of it to make an economic go of it, that's one of the big questions, obviously, that we have in front of us. I do want to make the point that we had some partners earlier on. We lost them in around 2009, 2010. But actually, since we've lost them, we've accelerated the pace of exploration. And a point that we like to make is that and I guess I skipped over kind of who Dorian is slide, but I think you probably know who we are. But so much of what we do is oil field support work in our company. And we have so many reasons to make this project work that the average company doesn't have. We create new markets for all of the oil field services companies that we have. We have lots of shareholders in the area, train, hire them. So we've got this, you know, social mandate that we're proud of, and we would, you know, help fulfill part of that. And it's local. It's in our backyard. And the money stays here. So let's talk a little bit about infrastructure. Here's a map that it's a very busy map. I apologize for that. But there's a lot to tell from this map. And our leases are really outlined in kind of the red kind of rectangular sort of thing going from north to south. There's some brown lands in there. Those are the Doyon Tagatili lands. As you can see, we are right next to the Parks Highway. We're right next to the Intertie. We are right next to the Alaska Railroad. We're close to Fairbanks and refineries. Pump Station 7 is a little bit to the north of us, and there are access points into the Taps Pipeline at the refineries as well. So it doesn't get a lot better than this as far as just infrastructure access, opportunities to do something a lot more quickly than you normally would in a much, much more remote part of the state. All of the straight lines on the map represent kind of the seismic that's been done over the last 10 or 12 years or so, and including the north end of the basin. Last point I will leave you with is on this slide, I think, is that the planned North Slope gas line route comes really right through the center of this map and adjacent to our leases. And so were we to find a lot of gas, we're certainly interested in seeing if we could talk about that at some point and getting some gas into that line. We've also built a road out to well sites. And I knew you were going to, I wasn't going to forget you. We built a road out to both of the well sites over the last 5 or 6 years, the road system is really along primarily an existing city right-of-way. The city has wanted for many years to develop that and open access up into that part of the country. We obviously played a role and assisted them in that, and that's a public asset. We don't own it. We built bridges over some of the sloughs. We've deeded those bridges to the city, and there actually is a bridge being built over the river. I'll show the river system in a minute, but being built over the Nanana River, which we have to have ferry across for our summer operations right now. That was funded in part by a large bond 2 or 3 years ago in the fall. But they're partially finished. I think they're running out of money. They may come back and talk to you, I think.
Did you have a question?
No, maybe a comment.
Okay.
That is one of those things where instead of having DOT build it, which would have gold-plated it for about $35 million, we tried to get it done for about $8 million, and it'll probably end up with another $1.5 million. Absolutely necessary, and for some of the safety factors. Some of it was right in the middle of it, the Corps of Engineers changed the height of the bridge, and that really threw it off. The engineers had not gone through the permitting process, and to be fair, the city of Nenana is one of the poorer communities in Alaska, and probably was slow getting some of their information in, so it got tangled up a little bit. But we'll keep pushing at it, and I'm hoping we can find some help from DOT. But there's a lot of issues there. But I've been probably one of the first, even though that's my hometown, that is not in my area of representation. So I've had to include a lot of people in that discussion to try to help it along a little bit. I don't have any conflict of interest in it, other than that's my hometown.
Very
just
good.
To let you know.
Very good. Any other questions at this point?
And Madam Chair, since you...
Yes, Senator Carfield.
I have to meet with the leadership at 4 o'clock, and I'm going to have to bail out. This is more interesting than probably one of my next conversations will be, but sorry.
Thanks. All right, go ahead, Mr. Murray. It looks like everybody's
okay. Just quickly, this is the basin is basically in blue, and it you can kind of see we've leased up most of it. Most mm-hmm. of the basin is really what this shows. It's very deep, plenty hot, and it's narrow and long. Petroleum system at Nenana. Basically, excellent source rocks. We see them in the wells in an immature form. We see those same source rocks at depth through our seismic, and we know that there's plenty of heat out there to basically expel oil and gas from those source rocks. It's just there. I mean, and we've seen plenty of migrated wet gas in the well bore over very, very thick packages of sands. And a wet gas system is oftentimes indicative of an oily system. I mean, and these kind of basins generally, if they are productive, you know, you'll see gas fields, oil fields, and then mixed gas and oil fields. We're very encouraged by all of that. We see great reservoir. It's really world-class reservoir out there, 24% porosity rock, clean quartz sands and good shales above the sands that would seal them in. So, and there are numerous different trap types out there. So, we like it. It's just an image that kind of shows you it's a very deep basin in parts, and there should be plenty of kitchen, as the oil guys say, to generate the oil and gas. Fact number two, well, 2 points I want to make really on this slide. Number one is a lot of permits to get, and we've worked very closely with the state agencies on this, and that's worked very well. And I have to compliment the state agencies as far as a lot of people come in and complain maybe, but I think they do a good job, real professional, timely response, and we're very appreciative of that.
Excuse me, Mr. Murray. Senator Walakowski had a question.
Thank you. What kind of oil are you finding in this area, conventional shale?
This is all conventional oil.
How about gas? What?
It's a wet gas, so you're seeing propanes, butanes, pentanes in the gas, and with a lot of methane. But it's you know, anywhere between 80% and 90% methane. The rest of it is the wet fractions.
Okay. Great. Go ahead.
The other point I wanted to make is we have a really good relationship with both the city, the tribal government, and the local community, and have lots of meetings down there. We have a lot of strong support at NANA for the project. This is just another version of the road and the infrastructure, kind of give you a sense of infrastructure that's being put in place. And there's a lot of community support for this as well. And in fact, some of the early funding to actually extend the road, it doesn't involve us at all. Interesting kind of come together of city government, tribal government, village corporation, Doyon, just broad community support for a lot of things that are going on out there. So it's an interesting project for that reason. You don't always see all these different groups aligning, you know, on something like this. We like that, and we think that's very good. This is a couple of slides that kind of give you a sense of what is to operate out there. This is the ferry system that we employ in the summertime when we're doing summer ops, and across the Nanana River. And this is actually where the bridge is being built right now, is where our ferry system is. This gives you another sense of the next slide on as far as the road system and what the country looks like, some of the small bridges that we've put in and deeded to the city. This is the well site of our last well. It's about 11 miles due west of Nanana. For some of you that know the oil patch fairly well, Doyon rigs are usually yellow in color. This is not a Doyon rig. It's a neighbor's rig. It worked okay. Went down kind of hard using a neighbor's rig, but they did a good job for us. So what do we know about all this? All the elements, as I mentioned early, source, reservoir, seal. And through the other geophysical tools, we really think that the hydrocarbon system there is extensive and should be. And we've modeled this and through basically the source rock that we see all over the place in the seismic and a lot of work that we've done in the lab on this, you know, we really think that it really has generated billions of barrels of oil and multiple TCF of gas. Now, you know, the question is how much of it's been trapped, how much can be recovered, is it economic, is it little, those are all the questions that we're still trying to sort through. But as far as a robust system, we're really quite convinced that it is that. I guess the last point on this slide really is because we're so close to infrastructure, we don't really need big accumulations even to get started, quite honestly. And you know, a relatively modest type of discovery, 20 to 25 million barrels of oil, actually it will do it on the modeling that we've done. So what's next? A lot more seismic is needed in different parts of the basin. We actually did a 3D program in between our two wells this past fall, just getting the results back on that. And we're and obviously the goals are to try to identify lower risk traps. We had some trap failure in the two wells that we drilled. And so we're spending a lot more money in 3D to try to lower the risk on trap failure next time through. And so we've already started looking at permitting and locating wells to drill next winter. We're also looking for partners that can help us share the risk. That's kind of where we are. So a lot more work to do, but we're kind of on track to keep going because we're very encouraged.
Mr. Murray, could you describe trap failure?
Trap failure, what we drilled on in the last well was basically a three-way closure up against a fault. And so it's kind of half of an inverted teacup up against a fault. And basically, we believe that the fault was not smeared, it didn't close, and so it wasn't an adequate seal on the fault. Plenty of good seal on the half of the inverted teacup, but apparently not on the fault, because we saw plenty of wet gas over hundreds of feet, actually. But it was not under pressure, too much water. It had all basically leaked out. Most of it leaked out over time. It looked like a depleted reservoir is what it looked like.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Any other questions at this point? Okay, go ahead.
Next slide is just to show you kind of what we did this past year and this past fall and kind of what we're moving towards right next to Nanana. It's kind of an assortment, really, of state lands, university lands, mental health trust lands, and Doyon Tugatili lands. Interesting sorting that out over time. That's where we are right now. As you can see, it's right next to the community, right next to the road, as far as the next project that's up for us there in the basin. It was the wettest summer in on record in the interior. As you can see, the drillers on the seismic crews had a rough go of it, muddy days, and then the guys that were gathering data had an even rougher time of it because a lot of this is in old burn areas and a lot of deadfall. Really rough conditions for them, but they did a good job for us, and I think the last slide just kind of shows you slinging stuff around with helicopters, and that's what we're doing. This is an area that the vibrosizers are going to work at this stage of exploration. You'd be cutting down too much brush, too many trees, and I know my Nanana friends would not be appreciative of just all the corduroying that we would be doing on the countryside. So we've chosen to go a bit more expensive route and with a much lighter touch. So I want to just talk about success for a moment. Obviously, oil is the focus, higher value. It would mean, you know, a lot of economic benefit for both the state and for Doyon. As I mentioned, minimum economic field size could be as low as 25 million barrels. Plenty of room in taps, kind of get there by rail, truck, or a feeder pipeline. We think the chance of success in the next well, given kind of all the work that we've done to date, is somewhere between 1 in 5 and 1 in 10 on the oil leg. Gas only, that's a real head-scratcher for us. That could be stranded for quite a while. We really don't know what the Fairbanks market's going to be, and if we're going to get locked out through all these other plans that are going on, people talk about building pipelines north and trucking this and that. Like I said, it's a head scratcher. I'm not here to suggest anybody should stop what they're doing now to solve Fairbanks problems, because we don't have an alternative to offer. But I mean, just as an investor and potential developer, we have to scratch our head about the local markets right now. Same thing goes with respect to a big line if it comes through. I mean, I think there are a lot of unanswered questions that we're trying to research and understand better with respect to, well, if we have gas, line comes through, can we stick gas in it? Is somebody going to let that gas through the liquefaction plant so we can sell it? Those are all questions we don't know the answers to today, but we're going to try to, over the coming months actually, and coming few months actually, try to understand that better. And then finally, we really believe that on the gas leg, given what we've seen in the wells so far, that we've so de-risked the Nanana Basin for commercial gas discoveries that the chance of success in the next well is 1 in 2 or 50-50.
Wow.
And finally, I just really want to thank you all, legislature and the people that administer the laws. The exploration credits is just is essential to hydrocarbon exploration in the interior, and I think you're going to hear it from my colleagues in their parts of Alaska as well. Middle Earth exploration would not have happened without state support. Most of these programs work fairly well. Some of them are sunsetting out. There's one in particular that is Middle Earth specific, it's the Frontier Basin Credits Program, which is not really utilized, at least on the drilling piece, because, I mean, it's supposed to be an 80% credit. It doesn't work out that way at all, and nobody's used it. It usually comes out to closer to 60 or 65%, and that's really what we can get under the other statutes. And you get the money back faster, frankly. And so it's a limited program, only 4 wells. There's a cap on each well that can be refunded, and it sunsets next year. We've talked around this building a little bit about perhaps some minor adjustments to that statute to both extend it a little bit because nobody's used it because it hasn't been workable, and a couple of ideas how to make it a little more workable and just kind of moving some language around, but not really changing, not asking for more money, not changing anything fundamental about it, just making it a more workable project or more workable statute. So with that, I thank you for your time, and if you have any questions.
Great.
We have lots of stuff at doyonoil.com if you want to go there, too.
Great. Senator Walikowski has a question.
Thank you. I really appreciate the update. I appreciate what you're doing out there. And I know that everyone that was at this table was a big supporter of this, doing this. And my recollection is one of the big reasons we were supportive of this is because we were trying to get gas to the interior. And it seems like that's no longer an option.
Gas was our focus initially, and that was the project. This was a gas project. no question about it. But what has changed is that starting in about 2009, there was an awful lot of noise about gas by truck from the North Slope. And if somebody's going to commit $200-$400 million, they have to get that money back. And we saw that we were going to get locked out potentially because we wouldn't be able to deliver gas fast enough, and we would be locked out of that market. And we would have walked away from this project in 2009, 2010, but for the fact that in that 2009 well, we saw evidence of an oil opportunity. And so that has that is really what's kept us going. And we would love to find a lot of gas, and we would love to keep gas in the interior for local use and possibly for export as well. But it just didn't make any economic sense given the risks of exploration to begin with, and then it looked like we might be shut out of a market for years and years that for us to just pursue this on a gas-only basis. But as we continue on, we're finding gas. So, we think we'll find it. Whether we can use it or not is, I guess, the big question.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
I mean, I don't represent Fairbanks. I'm a huge supporter of Fairbanks getting gas, the interior getting gas, but I'm just wondering if, I don't know exactly where along on the timeline they are with that. It seems, the prices keep going up. I'm wondering if maybe we need to redirect our state resources to making sure we get gas out of this project, because this seems probably a heck of a lot more economic than trucking gas off the North Slope and driving it for hundreds of miles down to where you are. But I know you probably don't want to get caught in that crossfire.
I really don't.
Couldn't, yes.
Yes,
Senator Stoltz.
I can sugarcoat some stuff. Isn't this a great place for joint agricultural projects as well?
It's
some of the best farmland in the state.
There's a lot of support. Apart from oil and gas and just recreational opportunities that this road opens up to, is correct. There's large ag parcels that Division of Agriculture would love to lease, or people lined up actually to lease it if the bridge can get in there. This also opens up some access into the Tioga Valley State Forest, where more forestry activity could take place as well. So there are a number of things that kind of, it's not just an oil and gas project that ultimately there will be other benefits that will come from it.
Very good. Any further questions for Mr. Murray? Yes, Senator Machuki. Welcome to the committee, by the way.
Thank you. I'm very sorry I wasn't here. Really wanted to be here for this presentation. We're dealing with marijuana and finance, but I will review it and may have some questions for you. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Murray, for your presentation. So next up is Joe Bovey. He is the Vice President of Land and Resources for AUTNA. So welcome, Mr. Bovey.
Ask your question.
We'll get your PowerPoint up here for you.
Slider left up and down.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Resource Committee. My name is Joe Bovey. I'm the Vice President of Land and Resources for AUTNA Incorporated. And a little background on AUTNA. AUTNA means the people of the river, or river people. And our ANCSA boundaries extend from Canada west almost all the way into and through parts of Denali National Park. We are located about 150 miles north of Valdez, 180 miles from Anchorage, and 250 miles southwest of Fairbanks. As you all are aware, the state of Alaska established six oil and gas basins in Alaska, and these are referred to as the Middle Earth areas. In Glen Allen, the area that we're exploring now is on the bottom right-hand corner. It's kind of an orange-shaped area, dot, circle. One thing the New Frontier Basin Tax Credit did, it allows 75% of seismic and 80% of exploration wells for tax credit purposes. There are certain things in the regulations that, as Mr. Murray discussed previously, is that they work good, but I believe what the state legislature actually wanted to do is incentivize some of these tax credit basins for explorations, for development, for rural gas and oil for home heating costs and things like that. A few recommendations we will be having here, but one of them is that if we could take some of the 025 credits, possibly merge some of the 023 with them, 023 credits, just for faster recovery of the tax credits, because the way it stands now, the 025 credits for Middle Earth, it takes over a year to get refunded from your tax credits, versus the 023, it's less than half that time. And also, the Middle Earth tax credits are going to expire June 30th, 2016, so we would also be very supportive and hope that you could all consider extending these for another couple of years. And without the tax credits that we're currently on within the Middle Earth, we would not be where we are today.
Great. Thank you. If you could pause for a moment. Senator Bonacowski.
Thank you. I don't know if you know the answer to this, and maybe DNR will, but do you have any sense of how much in Frontier Basin tax credits the state's paid out?
Not exactly, but I think Paul Decker, who's going to be here a little bit later, has that information.
Yes, he is online, and we can. If you'd hold that question, he'll be speaking later. Great.
A little background about the Otna region or Copper River Valley. The geological structure of interest is currently under state land. Millions of dollars invested in exploration in the region to date, and we're probably talking nearly $100 million over the last 30 or 40 years. Mm. The geological data and past exploration gives strong natural gas indications, and to a lesser amount, some conventional types of oil. And what we're focusing on with our project is strictly for the natural gas development. The formation is accessible to South Central Alaska population centers. It's off the state highway road system and very near 115 or 10 miles from the Port of Valdez. Some technical drilling challenges due to high water pressure were identified in our previous wells. So this goes along with lessons learned simply because the previous explorers didn't understand that there's going to be so much high water pressure there, along associated with the natural gas as well. So we've learned our lesson from the previous or most recent two wells, and so I'll get into this a little bit further, but in our next exploration phase of drilling the new well in the region, we're going to compensate for that because we have special, you know, drilling engineers and things like that that can compensate the high water pressures. This next slide shows the Copper River Basin natural gas, and the red kind of obtuse oblong area there shows the area that's been explored the last 30, 40, or 50 years. The oil and gas exploration wells, there's been a total of 8 out there, primarily all on state land, except 2 or 3 that's been on Otna Corporation land. And just to give you some reference there, Glen Allen is at the junction of the Glen Highway and Richardson Highway. This area here, like I say, is about 110, 150 miles north of Valdez and about 175 or 180 miles east of Anchorage. And the area that we have been exploring that's under the state license is the white rectangular box in the middle of the photograph there. Just a little geological summary of that area there that we're exploring. We have identified porous, permeable, and hydrocarbon-bearing lower Cretaceous. Several large fault-bounded geological structures may hold economic accumulations of natural gas. And one of the things that's positive there is that we do have traps available because the water is still there, highly pressurized, and also the natural gas.
Yes, Senator Chickie had a question.
Thank you. You talked about tax credits a moment ago, and there's a big difference between commercially viable and residential use, if you will. Have you ever investigated the potential of locally available gas tax credits versus commercially viable production?
Senator Machiki, through the chair, as far as in relation to exploration tax credits, we have not, because our whole emphasis at this point is that we are just hoping or fingers crossed that we can find enough to supply our local community for natural gas. Those credits, as you well know, under the 025 or even 023, you know, there's going to be production credits allowed for that, but also a certain amount of royalty back to the state because it is a state-owned lands, resources.
Follow-up, Senator Machiki?
Madam Chair, just a comment that I think at some point we have to look at. We're traditionally looking at large quantities of commercially producible gas as opposed to local usage, and I think at some point we have to separate those two and think about it in the future, but just a comment. Thank you.
And just an illustration on the bottom of this slide here, it shows kind of a cross-section of the geology, and this is associated with the previous past well log data from Mobil Oil, Union Oil, and things like that from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. The current prospects, in December 2013, Otna was awarded a state of Alaska exploration license on 44,000 acres of state land. In early 2014, January 2014, Otna partnered with two exploration partners, one being Rudder and Wilbanks, who's been in the region for a number of years, and a new player, small player to Alaska, Santa Petroleum, well into Australia. Later in 2014, we processed 90 miles of pre-existing seismic from the 70s, 80s, and then the 90s. All that data is being turned over to the state as conditions of our license agreement. We identified a structure within that area after we conducted 40 miles of new seismic, and we finished that project up in December. It was started in November. It was fairly successful, except that we had we used vibro-size machines, which are 80,000-pound rubber-tired machines, and because the weather was so warm this year, we had trouble getting across some lowlands and things like that. Looking back at it, we would probably go with a dynamite, which is more costly, but... So just other than that, it worked out very good. And preliminary data shows outline of a crust of gas 14 miles west of Glen Allen and approximately 2 miles north from the Glen Highway. And this next slide is a little bit better map of the well target. The black rectangular box shows the state license area. And you can see the well target there, and it's not has been finalized yet, but it's just north of the Glen Highway, like I say, about 12, 14, 15 miles west of Glen Allen. And then the two associated wells that we just more recently did, the Otna 119 and the Moose Creek wells that were drilled in the early 2000s through 2007, 2008. And this is just a snapshot because we did do the seismic in November, December. We got back the data, and this is just kind of what we found so far. It shows on the left the Moose Creek geology, the Otna 119 in the middle, and the exploration target on the right-hand side. And just to give you some reference of those are all within about a 20-mile radius. The exploration target there on state-owned land, that's going to have a base of about 10 to 12 square miles at the base of it. So it's not a large structure, like a world-class structure. In the geology out there, it's not going to be one large oil or gas field. There's probably going to be numerous structures out there that would have to be developed or drilled independently of one another.
Question?
Yes, Senator Michiki had a question.
Thank you. Through the chair, I see these three shallow targets. Were there any deeper targets than that 1,300-foot level?
Yeah, these targets here... the Moose Creek and the Otna 119 have all been drilled. They've been drilled about 6,000 feet.
6,000 feet.
So we're looking at the exploration target on state land to be similar, between 5,000 and 6,000, 7,000 feet, but we're not real sure yet. That's one thing that we haven't found out or evaluated fully because we just got the data back last Monday of the actual depth of this. But in consideration, it's going to be similar out there, and most of the structures are not in the 10,000 to 12,000-foot range or more in the 5,000 to 7,000-foot range.
Thanks.
The next slide is a range of market opportunities. Obviously, we're not trying to put the cart before the horse, but we realize that if there's only thousands of cubic feet or BTUs a day, there would be no development. We just shut everything off and go back to the old system. If there's millions of BTUs a day, obviously our first and foremost priority is to develop the local market with our utility companies, getting into the school district, that sort of thing. So there would be some cost savings there too. It would not only be the tax credits back to the explorers or the investors, but also there would be some reduction in the power cost equalization credits, some help to the school district, and also local communities and things. And then obviously, I mean, we can all cross our fingers and hope for the best. If there's billions, I mean, we would probably look at some sort of a pipeline to in-state markets or international markets. And the next slide is just the development options, some of the things we're looking at, and we're still only in the exploration pre-development. But we have done some background research and pre-feasibility studies. The local market is viable. As you all know, rural Alaska is really hurt with the high cost of energy. This is a little bit outdated, this slide, but just considering that if our gas or diesel fuel is $4 a gallon and the estimated natural gas market delivered is about $1.67, there's going to be about a 50 to 60% savings. That's going to be probably a little bit lower because, like I say, this is a couple, 2-3 weeks outdated slide. This next slide is just a timeline of where we're at. The green is actually has been completed. So from the last year, 14 months, we've invested $3 million in it. Over the course of the next 6 to 8 months, we're going to be investing another $1 to $1.5 million in some of the drilling plan schedules, procuring a drill rig, contractors, that sort of thing. So we have every inclination to go ahead and develop this gas reservoir. And after we do the preliminary, some of the civil work and things like that, we're anticipating between $10 and $12 million to drill another well out there on state land. Conclusions and next steps. As I mentioned, we're in initial stages now of engineering and designing a new well with completion prior to June 2016, as that's when the Middle Earth tax credits will expire. So we want to take as much of those as we can. We want to finalize our RCA application for local gas distribution, and this is a twofold because we always want to have a fallback plan, and the first and foremost plan is to develop the local natural gas. The second plan is if the natural gas, the well doesn't work out and everybody walks home at the end of the day, we are seriously considering trucking in, hauling in, transporting in liquefied natural gas, such as a micro Fairbanks natural gas plant there for the hub, the general area around Glen Allen. So the RCA permit is required to do either, and we're just about a year into that process with going through the permitting and getting some right-of-ways approved and things like that and initial construction design. The last thing is to determine and develop our markets. Depending on the size, the quantity, and quality of the gas, is a pipeline only to Glen Allen justified? Is a pipeline to Valdez or back to Anchorage or north or south from Glen Allen? Also a micro LNG plant, trucking in gas, and also electric intertie. From our initial assessments, it's probably cheaper to ship electricity than it is to build a small 6 or 8 inch gas pipeline.
Very good. Committee questions for Mr. Bovee? Seeing none. Thank you very much for this update. Very interesting.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bovee. So next up is Greta Schertz. She is with NANA, and I don't see Lance Miller here.
He isn't here.
Okay, great.
Do I do this one?
Yes. Oh, no, pardon me, no. We'll do him after Greta. Welcome, Greta.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greta Schirk. I'm the Corporate and Public Policy Liaison at NANA Regional Corporation. And we appreciate the opportunity to provide our comments on Middle Earth tax credits today. Unfortunately, Dr. Miller wasn't able to make it. He's being pulled away on another issue elsewhere, so he sent me down as a messenger. Make no mistake, I'm not a geologist, but I'll do my best to present the information and where NANA's at on our efforts in the region.
Great.
So, Aki, can I use this? Or just, okay, sorry. At NANA, our mission is to improve the quality of life for more than 13,500 Inupiat shareholders by maximizing economic growth, protecting and enhancing our lands, and promoting healthy communities with decisions and behaviors guided by our Inupiat Iqaluit, which is our traditional value system. We believe that working to lower the cost of energy in our communities will help achieve this mission, and therefore NANA has a keen interest in the natural gas potential in region. I'll jump into the project update here. These figures on this slide will show the location of the areas in the Kotzebue Basin where we believe there's potential for gas. I'll explain more about the basin later in my presentation, but I wanted to point out that the Kotzebue Basin is very similar to the Cook Inlet Basin. Our main targets are onshore and on NANA land. NANA shares Doyon and Otna's position on the Middle Earth tax credits that you just heard because of the dire need for affordable energy in Northwest Alaska, where residents are paying anywhere from $6 to $11 a gallon for gasoline and heating fuel. In addition to the 11 communities in the NANA region, the Red Dog Mine is also a possible anchor customer for natural gas. Some history here on this slide will show the history of the exploration in the basin. The initial work was conducted by Chevron in the 1970s with two wells drilled to approximately 6,000 and 8,000 feet respectively, along with the seismic work. And more recently, NARA retained the services of an external consultant, if you will, called Moyes & Company, and has since reprocessed some of the seismic data that was gathered and worked on new geological and geophysical interpretations of the data. This slide shows the Kotzebue Basin. You'll note the red dots. Those are where the two wells were drilled in the 70s. One is on Baldwin Peninsula there near Kotzebue and one near Cape Espenberg. The tan areas are potential or prospect areas for natural gas. This slide here shows the seismic data that was collected, and again the red dots will show where the two wells were drilled by Chevron. Oh, this is a Lance slide that he put together. So it's a cross-section or a vertical slice through the earth. The geological section, it's a correlation between the two wells. And he wanted to point out the stratigraphy of mixed shales and sandstones that are interpreted by geologists to have yielded some prospective zones. Significant coal seams over 100 feet thick were also encountered in the well. NANA's new efforts have led to five companies signing confidentiality agreements in 2014 and one company from overseas making two visits to Alaska into the region. The company deemed the basin was too high of a geological risk to fund the exploration in total. There is no deal yet with that company. We're still in discussion with them. Because of this, NANA is continuing to evaluate how we can help fund the seismic work to help de-risk the geology and technical aspects of the Kotzebue Basin. As I mentioned on the previous slide, by getting more information in the way of seismic data, we'll have a better chance, we believe, in defining potential targets for drilling. And as my counterparts from the other Native corporations pointed out, the state incentives have definitely helped in the exploration. And we just appreciate the work of the legislature and the support and the effort in helping to decrease the cost of living and energy out there in our communities. So thank you. Thank you for your time, and thanks for all your effort and public service.
Thank you very much, Greta. Any questions for Greta?
Comment.
Yes, Senator Michiki.
Yeah, your slides aren't numbered, but you captured something perfectly, and that was after the Intero report, 93 to 95. It says relatively high risk for exploration for relatively small field sizes, ignoring local market needs. Mm-hmm. The company that have looked in the past are all looking at commercial viability, and I hope NANA continues on the value of the local market. Well, I think it's imperative, and I think we do need to look again at incentives for helping Alaskans on small quantities and small finds of natural gas. I think it's the key, particularly in Northwest and Middle Earth communities.
Right. Very good.
Thank you so much, Senator Michiki. Appreciate the support.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Greta. So the last presenters are online, and my staff, Forrest Wolf, is going to switch the slides for them. So Mr. Paul Decker, Director of Oil and Gas Division, is online. And John Larson from the Department of Revenue is available for questions. So Senator Michiki, you had asked a question, or excuse me, Senator Walikowski had asked a question earlier that perhaps Mr. Larson could answer. So, Mr. Decker, can you hear us?
Yes, for the record, this is Paul Decker. I'm Acting Director of the Division of Oil and Gas.
Welcome. We are ready to go through your slide deck. We have Forrest at the helm, and he'll move the slides for you.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So we'll just launch right into the page two. This is a schematic rendering of pretty much all of the main sedimentary basins in Alaska. And so, of course, in the Arctic north of the Brooks Range, we have vast resources and reserves that have been producing there for quite a long time. Also in Cook Inlet, you see down in south central, And all of these other yellow areas would really still be in what we'd call sort of frontier basin exploration status. And the ones on shore, exclusive of North Slope and Cook Inlet, are typically referred to as Middle Earth. So if we turn the page and look at the resource assessment slide, what we've done here is just compile statewide resource assessments made by the U.S. Geological Survey and the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management for the offshore OCS waters. But we've compiled in the five regions the various resource assessments that they do actually at a more granular scale, a more fine-grained scale than that. So we've done some compiling here. You see the regions on the left, the mean oil estimates, and the mean gas estimates in green and red, respectively. So what I wanted to call your attention to is that the interior basins are really not fully assessed, even by the federal government, in statistical terms. They've only done quantitative assessments for the Yukon Flats and Kandik basins. So other key basins that you've heard about today, Nanana, Kotzebue, Copper River, as well as some of the other ones, the Horlitten and the Susitna Basin, would be important ones to keep in mind the fact that we don't have quantitative assessments for those. Also, in the other southern Alaska basins, most of the resource that you see there, 2.86 billion barrels of oil and 23.45 TCF of gas, that's mostly assessed in federal OCS waters, not in the Alaska Peninsula onshore area. So it's a minor amount of that in the onshore Alaska Peninsula. So the point of this slide is really that we aren't necessarily elephant hunting in the frontier basins, and I think really important consideration should be made, as Senator McKinchy just made the point there about seeing to local markets and local supplies.
Director Decker? Director Decker, could you pause for just 1 second? Senator McKinchy had a question for you.
Certainly.
Mr. Decker, do we have a typo on this page for mean gas estimates? Is billion cubic feet what you mean to say on the top of the red slide?
Yes, that is correct. Billion cubic feet, so 23,000 billion would be 23 trillion.
Okay. I've got you.
Okay, yeah, sorry for the shorthand there. We just dropped some zeros, and we tend to think in terms of either billions or trillions.
Right, you dropped it down to 255 TCF at the bottom, so it was a little bit confusing, but thank you.
Okay, that's basically the sum of all those, and then, yeah, sorry about that confusion. Okay, so really, when we talk about the terms Middle Earth and Frontier Basins, in terms of geographic area, if we're restricting it to the onshore, they're mostly synonymous. So Middle Earth has come to mean, I think, informally, the Alaskan lands south of 68 degrees north latitude and outside of the Cook Inlet. When we talk about frontier basins, that could be construed to include any of those yellow areas outside of Cook Inlet and North Slope, any of the sedimentary basins, in other words, other than North Alaska and Cook Inlet. But when we talk about the frontier exploration status, we really there mean there's no significant oil or gas discoveries made to date. They're not producing. They're definitely underexplored, and therefore they lack proven petroleum systems, meaning we don't have discovered economically producible oil or gas in these areas. So as James Murray from Dorion pointed out, there are some positive indications in many of these basins, but so far we would not consider them proven petroleum systems with economic fields. So moving on then, if we think about the next slide, Middle Earth versus Frontier Basin in terms of the way they're typically understood from a tax credit label perspective, the Middle Earth tax credits, at least when I hear it referred to, I think most people mean the credits for 4355.024A, these are credits for actual producing Middle Earth areas. that would allow up to $6 million against the liability for production tax. And John Larson from DOR may correct me if I had this mixed up, but this is my understanding. And then the Frontier Basin tax credits are under 43.55025 and therefore exploration. So A6 has to do with the credit for drilling the first four exploration wells in the Frontier Basin areas defined by the circles in paragraph O of the statute. And A7, it applies to the same areas, but it's credit for acquiring the first four seismic programs in those areas. So wells would come with an 80% credit up to $25 million per well, and the seismic would pay for the seismic credit would pay for 75% up to $10 million per survey.
So, excuse me, Director Decker, Senior Walikowski had a question.
Thank you, Director. Can you just explain for me? So, the first one, the Middle Earth tax credit for production. I assume there's been no production, so there's been no tax credit yet. Then the 025A6 credit, is that four exploration wells in total that the state is responsible for, or four exploration wells per company? And the same would apply to A7 for seismic surveys. If you can answer that, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly, Chair, Senator Walikowski, the A6 well credit is for the first four wells in any of the Frontier Basins spelled out in O. So a total of four wells, no more than two of which can be within the same area as defined in O. And I'll show you that map with the circles in just one moment. On the other hand, the seismic credit would be, again, the first four seismic surveys total, and no more than one of which can be within one of those circles. That's the way that was written.
Follow up.
Yes, follow up, Senator Walikowski.
So I understand the maximum liability the state would have is for four exploration wells. So 80% of 25 million is what, $20 million times four? So the maximum A6 liability would be 20 times four, $80 million, and the maximum A7 liability would be 10 million times four is 40 million multiplied by 75%, 30 million. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walikowski, that's the same way I read that, yes.
And do you have a sense of how much we've paid out in tax credits so far?
Through the Chair, Senator Walikowski, I do, after checking with the DNR and DOR contacts that I work with on those, it appears that for the Frontier Basin credits, currently we've paid out $7.5 million, and that's for one seismic program.
Follow-up?
In other words, the well credits have not been used to date.
We just okay. And I thought I heard testimony about people exploring, and maybe they just haven't submitted their for the credits yet. But it I would certainly expect that. And do you have an explanation for that? Maybe why we haven't heard that hasn't been paid out.
Senator Walikowski, I believe that at this point, some of the drilling has been conducted under other credits. Dorian, I believe, has used the O23 credits, which include other provisions. I can't say for certain that they did not apply and have not applied for the 025A6 credit on one of their wells. If James Mary is still in the room, maybe he can clarify on that. I'm sorry, I don't have that answer in front of me.
Why don't we have Mr. Mary come to the microphone? Would you like to and clarify?
And if
yes, Senator Walikowski.
I'm just curious if someone could explain also how much the 023 credits are and what those apply to.
Sure.
Refresh our memories a little bit.
Sure. Mr. Mary.
I actually am a lawyer by training, but I'm not a tax lawyer.
If you would identify yourself once again for the record.
Mr. James Mary with Doya. Paul is correct. We've used different programs under different projects, and so we've only used, of the Frontier credits that he's been focused on, the four wells, the four seismic programs. Basically, we did use one of the credits for one seismic program, But one of the things that we looked at was an analysis of using the O23 credits versus the Frontier credits for the well that we just recently drilled. And we saw that we actually would get as much money back under O23, and we get it back three times faster than we would under O25. And so that's why we went with O23. I hope that helps.
Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Maybe you can answer. I mean, why did we pass O25A6 then if we had O23 available?
I think there was a lack of understanding on a lot of people's parts, and including ours, actually, because we had never operated a project when that bill passed. But when you start operating and you know, you're moving the numbers around, you're doing the analyses, you're writing the checks, and it all kind of starts to clear up for you. And so that's how we identified the problem with the Frontier Credits legislation.
Okay, follow up.
Is the O23 credits, is that 80% also?
The O23 credits are an aggregation of different types of credits, and for us and the things that we do, they roughly add up to, when you kind of piece them all together and you meet the requirements, around 65%. Sometimes you get, and that's not a really 65% of everything that you've spent, but it's a fairly large bucket of allowed costs.
So I do want people to be aware that John Larson from the Department of Revenue is online. So let me ask him. Mr. Larson, can you hear us? And do you have any further comments to the questions?
Yes. Senator Deacon, this is John Larson with the Department of Revenue. Just to clarify, the 65% under the O23 credits, that's actually a combination of the well lease expenditure credits under 4355-023L, which is the amount of 40% of the well lease expenditures. And then also added onto that is the 023B carry forward loss credit of 25%. And so that's how you derive the 65% credit for the 023 credits.
Thank you. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, maybe for revenue or for DNR. What would the tax rate be if there was a find and started bringing this to production? Would this be subject to the GVR, or did we? I'm just trying to remember if we set a tax rate on this that was lower. Can someone refresh my memory?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, the GVR applies only to oil, so it would depend on the find there, whether it was a gas or oil production.
Was that Mr. Larson?
Yes, I'm sorry. This is John Larson.
All right, thank you. And also, Mr. Murray, you wanted to comment on that?
Yes, sir. Well, this is James Murray again. Let me qualify that in that there are special tax rates for these interior or the frontier basins, and you all passed some legislation in the last several years. And so a couple of years ago, and then it was changed again, I think, just last year a little bit. But basically, what we have is a special tax for the frontier basins that is a 4% flat gross wellhead value tax for the first 7 years of production of new fields in interior Alaska or in frontier basins. And then, depending on oil or gas, whatever it is, and then you, after 7 years, you would flip to whatever the rate of the day is on the slope. It's pretty much how it roughly works. It should work.
Senator Wilkowski.
So is that a flat, are you able to go through credits or deductions below 4%? Or
no.
That, okay.
No.
And then after 7 years, would that be, would it be eligible for GVR at that point?
I think I'm going to have to defer to Mr. Larson on that. I'm not expert in what happens after 7 years.
Mr. Larson.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, this is John Larson. The GVR credit would apply for oil production from the basin after the seven-year period. That's correct.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski?
Royalties, straight 12.5% royalty on these?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Let's see. Going back to Mr. Decker and your presentation, if there are no other questions.
Madam Chair, thank you. So we'll pick up on page 6. And this is a map showing circles drawn around the coordinates listed in statute in 4355.0250. And so that was the method selected for defining some of the criteria for where the frontier basin tax credits could apply. And it's important to remember that you have to be within a sedimentary basin as well as within the circle. So it's kind of a Venn diagram sort of criteria that has to be satisfied by the Commissioner of Natural Resources in order to receive the credit. But these are simply the circles shown there, and you can see the areas that we're talking about. Both Nemana and Yukon Flats are within the large circle around Fairbanks. The Kotzebue-Sellerick Basin, or most of it, is within reach of the Kotzebue Circle, and the Copper River Basin is within reach of that circle around Glen Allen. And then there are a couple of other areas that were intended to also help stimulate exploration in the Yukon River Delta and the Alaska Peninsula. If we turn the page, page 7, don't need to spend any time on this, but you can see what I'm getting at with the Venn diagram idea. The yellow areas that are within the circles really would be the areas that would be qualified for exploration under the for the tax credit under this program. If there are no questions on that, we'll just move quickly on to page 8. And what I wanted to talk about now has to do with exploration licensing as an alternative to our area-wide lease soils that we have. For example, on the North Slope, we have 3 area-wide lease soils each fall. In southern Alaska, we have the Cook Inlet and the Alaska Peninsula area-wide lease soils. So in other areas of the state where it's not as easy to get leases, people can apply for exploration licenses. And this is a list of the current licenses, either active or pending. And you see we have 7 listed there, 5 active, 2 pending. And so this is one vehicle that people have used to get access into some of these Middle Earth frontier basins. If we turn the page to page 9, you can see where these 7 active and pending leases are, as well as one, the Nemana, that Mr. Mary spoke of, that's already been converted to a lease. So just to list through these, The Nemana has been largely converted, entirely, I think, converted to lease, so that's a very large area of leasehold now. The Healy is the gas-only exploration license just to the south of there, so on the north side of the Brooks Range, or of the Alaska Range. The North Nemana is proposed as an exploration license, butting right up against the Nemana, or the previous Nemana license. Working our way south, Susitna has one large area there, the central block, that's been converted to lease, as well as 2 adjoining areas that are still in the active exploration license stages. And a proposed exploration license near Houston Willow, presumably for cobalt methane. And then a recent one added down in southwest Cook Inlet, down on the Nemiskan Peninsula, where there was activity with some oil shows and some oil tested in wells back in the first part of the last century. So if we don't have any questions on that, I'd be happy to just go on and review the recent activity. I think you've heard from the individual companies, this is page 10 now, but Dorian has been active. I'd say they've been the most active explorer within the Middle Earth areas. Within the Nemana Basin, they drilled 2 wells, Nunavax number 1 and 2, between 2009 and 13. They've acquired 2D seismic and more recently, I should have noted the fact that they've acquired more recent 3D seismic as well in the northern part of the Nemana Basin, as well as doing other geochemical and geophysical and geochemical surveying. Yukon Flats, they're not quite as far along. They haven't drilled there, but they've certainly acquired seismic and done other geophysical and geochemical work. Otna, as Mr. Bovey spoke of, near Tolsona exploration license. They've reprocessed some 2D seismic, and I should say they've also acquired about 40 miles of new data. They're looking at ways of attracting investment to follow up with drilling the well there to follow up on the activity that was most recently explored by the Rudder and Wilbanks well in 2007 through 2009.
NANA, as Greta spoke of, has the Kutztown Basin area. They're certainly evaluating the marketing prospects based on the recent wells and seismic data. Houston Valley, where at the Healy gas-only exploration license, has drilled one well. They finished that well in late 2014. No data yet publicly available from that, but we wish them success. And then Coquimbo Energy, they have significant license holdings now that I've spoken to during the Susitna Basin and the Southwest Coquimbo Exploration License. They have not actually done any drilling to date, and then in the Southwest Coquimbo Exploration License area, that was issued in late 2014. As far as I know, they haven't done any exploration of any sort on that one yet. So that's really where I wanted to leave this, I think, and I'd be happy to take any questions that the committee has.
Thank you, Director Decker. It looks like Senator Michiki has a question.
Yeah, Director Decker, just a question for you. I don't remember the history on the Frontier Basin tax credits, but just looking at the locations in 4355-0250, looks like there was perhaps some focus on providing local gas to those communities. Am I reading something into this that isn't here? Was it on previous exploration, or is there somewhat of a focus on providing credits for residential use in that subsection?
Senator Michiki, through the chair, this is Paul Decker again. You're certainly right that that is certainly one of the criteria that the statute, I believe it's paragraph M of 025, actually speaks to is, let's see if I have it here handy, the proximity to a community in need of a local energy source. That's one of the criteria that the Commissioner of Natural Resources needs to evaluate in determining whether a project qualifies for this credit.
That's interesting. Thank you.
Any other questions for Director Decker? Very good. Thank you so much, Director Decker, and also to John Larson from the Department of Revenue. Very good. With no further questions, that ends our agenda for today. Thanks, committee members, for being here. I hope it was helpful information. Our next meeting is Friday, March 13th, and we'll be hearing from the Oil and Gas Competitiveness Review Board at that time. I'll adjourn the meeting. Let the record reflect the time is 4:56 p.m.